So hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Lee Piccirillo.
Dr. Hunter Stevens.
And we would like to welcome you to another, number 55, I believe it is, 55, 55th Head Game Podcast episode, where we are going to be getting into chaos. And it's coming. Well, we thought it was coming, but in fact, it's actually arrived. And the antidote for fear and how chaos can represent itself, what it does to us, how it impacts our lives, our roles as individuals, professionals, parents, even our children. We're going to address that and a whole lot more. We've got a fresh new perspective coming off the island of St. Lucia, and he is going to dazzle us with his wit, and we're certainly going to sit back and appreciate his tan. So sit back, enjoy another game of the Game Podcast coming to you. I like it. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot. So natural. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Head Game Podcast. My name is Dr. Lee Piccirillo.
Dr. Hunter Stevens.
And he's back. He's back from vacation. We were just warming up to a little Depeche Mode. And it's getting the juices flowing. It's an absolutely gorgeous day here today. November 20th, 2020. 11-20-2020. Play that number. if you're a betting man, a betting person. A lot of betting going on, betting in the world. How long it's going to take for the Eagles to actually pull out a victory.
Mm-hmm.
There's that bet.
Mm-hmm.
There's the, what did you just bring to my attention? Who's out for this week's game?
Miles Garrett
from the Cleveland Browns. Did he test positive or was he out because of tracing?
It's on COVID reserve list. So I'm not necessarily sure what that means.
I wonder what the over-under is on COVID. You know, there's probably some type of line in Vegas.
It definitely affects it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the new IR.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that they have that list, the unable to perform, cannot participate. So I guess before we sort of get after it a little bit, you were seriously missed last time that we actually did this.
Thanks.
And your tan has faded just a bit.
Just a little. I'm starting to peel a little bit on the shoulders.
You know, the fans can't really appreciate the very nice bronzed look that you had when you came back.
Right.
Tell us all about St. Lucia.
Yeah, St. Lucia was great. It was interesting to kind of get away to a place. So St. Lucia was the furthest south I've ever been in the world.
It's down there.
Yeah, so it's probably, maybe a couple hundred miles just north of Venezuela. Small island. I believe it was a British held island for a long time. Everybody was driving on the left side of the road, so that was definitely an experience. Most of the roads are very windy and steep, about a lane and a half wide on the mountainside, and one wrong turn kind of takes you over it. So it was definitely an experience. But once you get there, it's one of the top 8 countries for COVID in terms of non-COVID cases. So it's one of the safest countries you can be in. I think it's like rated as a number like one travel site in terms of not contracting it. So what the challenge is with that is that there's a lot of regulations going in. So we land with 3 other planes, one giant liner from the British Airways, and we're in line for 2 hours standing on the tarmac with these planes. But
after you've already arrived in the country.
Right, after we've traveled
for on the plane for 2 hours.
7 hours.
How long is the flight? Because did you connect out of Miami?
Yeah, I connected out of Miami. We ended up getting a direct flight back. So it's really about a 5-hour flight. So it's not too bad. But coming from Miami, it was about a 7-hour journey. So then we're standing for an additional 2 hours on the tarmac and everybody's getting their temperature checked. You had to have a negative COVID case within 7 days prior to arrival. And then also you had to make sure that you cleared with the customs that you were staying at a COVID sanctioned.
A COVID friendly?
Yeah.
COVID sanctioned.
Resort or hotel.
Gotcha.
But once we got there, it was great. Shout out Sandals. All-inclusive, 12 restaurants, beachfront. We had a walkout suite. And so what that means is we could just swing open our doors. We had a small patio, a little bit of grass, and then the beach was right there. So we could just kind of walk in and stroll onto the beach. And the water was clear, the water was warm. They had, we did a little bit of water skiing, some hobby catting, and however you pronounce it, which is a small sailboat. It's kind of like a catamaran in terms of having these two pylons side by side, a net in the middle. And then my then wife, now wife, sat on the front. And then I was on the back, and they give you a little bit of a lesson. And as the wind shifts, the sail shifts close to your face. So you kind of have to duck underneath it and switch to the other side of the boat, and you steer it. So that was a lot of fun.
Did you kind of fit in the Hobie?
Yeah. So I was okay. You know, you have your legs hanging off a little bit, but it was fun. We did some scuba diving, which was really fun. And then, yeah, the restaurants was really nice. We did probably one of our favorite events was some horseback riding. But it was a horseback riding and swim. So they take you in a car, again, on these narrow pathways, roads, and it's about 15 minutes away, and you get to this just hole-in-the-wall stable, if you will. But it's a stable nonetheless, and they greet you that you have to wear a mask, and you're carrying everything with you. And they take you for about a 20-minute ride through some streets, which there's actually a lot of really large houses in that area. For some reason, so maybe it's a highly populous area or a very wealthy area compared to the rest of the island, where most of it is, there's no sidewalks, there's no, houses. I was looking as we were driving to the resort at night, if any lights were on. I don't think I saw a single light in a house, which was really interesting. Most people were outside, but this part of the area was very nice, and you go through this pathway that if you didn't know it was there, this trail that if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't have found it. And you end up in this large, like, cove. And the way I say a cove, it kind of wraps around. And on one side, you have a mountain. The rest is the beach. And then there's a little bit more rocks on the other side. And somebody is, windsurfing, classically. And then you show up to this very small residential-owned bar. So there's just, like, this small bar with these little souvenir shop on the side. And then they take you and you actually swim with the horses. So you get to ride. They take off the saddles. They give you like this thick rubber pad. You put it on and then they ride you two by two into the water. And so my experience was me being a tall 6'8 person and the horses not being the tallest I've ever seen or ridden. It wasn't my first time riding, but I'm in no ways experienced, especially.
I'm imagining the... And I have seen a picture. You showed me a picture.
Yeah, my legs are probably maybe 2 feet off the ground in comparison to everybody else's. And so
your horse was not as many hands high as you would have preferred.
Correct. So as I'm riding him going into the water, he's a little bit squirrely. He's a little bit wily.
More of a sea biscuit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Had a lot of power. But,
right. A lot of power,
right,
but
right.
Little guy.
My wife's actually, hers was probably the dopiest looking one, but his name was Rocky. And
of course.
I thought that was very fitting for Philadelphians. But as I was riding, his leg actually kicked my knees in the water. And that kind of spooked me. So again, when you're riding bareback, which I've never done, you're just kind of feeling the spine up the rear end a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I feel that kick and I start to kind of tip. And with fear of not grabbing and pulling this animal onto me, I kind of just let go and bail into the water. And everybody is cracking up on the beach. The three couples that are with us, the instructor who's the whole time has just been whipping it around, and Sarah, my wife. And so me being tall, though, and my horse not being super tall, we're probably in like 2 feet of water,
right?
3 feet.
It's easy
of water.
To get back on.
But I'm in the water and I'm underwater. I'm like, I'm hoping this horse doesn't rear and just like stomp on me.
Right.
So that's the thing. I immediately pop up as fast as I can. And then I'm like, okay, well, I just got to jump right back up and not let this like kind of linger on. So I try to hop up once and I miss. And then I hop up again and I finally get back up and I'm able to ride it. But the instructor, as we get out, was like, you needed to be closer to the base of the neck because that's where you can kind of get a good hold with your legs. And
so
I was too far back. I was like sitting back. And then I told everybody else, and I happened to be the only one who fell that day into the water. But it was a fun time. And then they rode us back. So St. Lucia was really fun. Again, nice to be in some warm water. We did a cabana one day where we rented out a cabana with a cooler next to us, had some beer, some water, and actually a person brought us breakfast on the beach, lunch on the beach, and then also drinks throughout the day as well.
Nice.
And the positive
benefits. So you literally didn't move all day.
The positive benefits of an all-inclusive and...
The cabana day.
Right.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
So it was a very nice trip and
gorgeous ceremony. I gave you a little shout out in your absence.
Yes, yes, I heard that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and glad that you had an awesome time. those memories, that horse story will be something that
there's a picture of me going in dry, and then you see me kind of tilting in one, and then the next picture I'm soaking wet. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah, very nice. So with your return, mm-hmm. we got some new artwork on the wall.
Yeah, it looks great.
We're evolving. Mm-hmm. The final edition is still yet to come, which is going to be a very nice frame that kind of sets it off the wall. Don't know what confidence we kind of have there to kind of do that ourselves here at the Head Game, but a little piece that we're slowly but surely building, mm-hmm. and hopefully transforming the studio week by week into something else. So really what we want to kind of get after today, and you and I just want to spend a minute or so talking about this whole off the clock idea.
Yeah, set it up.
That you and I had discussed. Mm-hmm. The Head Game began as a traditional radio show. For those of you who do not know that, it was about 4+ years ago. It was through a small AM station, WBCB. Shout out to them. They were all, shout out to Foxy.
1490.
And they took really good care of us very early on when we knew absolutely nothing about communications in general, certainly radio. And it just started at a half an hour. It worked its way to an hour. And unfortunately, with the COVID pandemic, we got kicked out of the studio like the rest of the world because nobody knew what the hell was going on. And it forced me to really reevaluate how much I wanted to stay on the air or stay communicating our core message as our Head Game brand continued to evolve, which led to Jessica and I at the time, this is last March, putting together via a Zoom call, just a simple notion of how could we further communicate it? Let's video and record a Zoom call. I invested in some microphones and it's just simply grown from there. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I'm bringing that up is because a lot of the things that we first covered on WBCB under the guise of the original Head Game was more about the local mindful athlete. For a year and a half, we highlighted high school athletes, Council Rock, Pensbury, Neshaminy, Holy Ghost. And that was certainly what we were about at that time. But as the Head Game has continued to evolve, we've really tried to expand our net or make it much wider of a net in trying to address topics that people really want to hear about, people really want to discuss. And then our point of difference became more about, as psychologists, as experts in human performance, right, how could we actually bring those topics to front and center? Mm-hmm. And how could we make it more of a casual listen? Someone who really just wants to tune in to two people, three people, sitting around discussing informally the psychological world, but in a digestible format,
right,
a casual discussion. And we started to throw around this idea maybe about a month ago of off the clock. Mm-hmm. What would two psychologists sound like off the clock?
Right.
And what could we then record and then share that? Mm-hmm. So today's effort is really about that off the clock mentality of not so much hitting the current events, staying on trend, what everyone else is talking about, and really getting after perhaps what we feel as psychologists is on everyone else's mind, mm-hmm. but really trying to let them peer in to how we think about these things in a much less traditional way.
Yeah, I think as we grow too, this is kind of growth with us, and you talk about evolution. I think that brings us to from where we were locally and over the years, kind of where we're going more nationally. And I think that's a big element too. And so I think in our growth and the feedback that we're getting, they want to hear more about what we're thinking, what we're seeing, what we're identifying, and how that's affecting people. And I think it's a big part of where I think we're going to head to in the future. And I think it is, as you guys come along for that ride as well, you'll see that growth. And we like to be transparent here about that growth. And I think as we shift maybe from more local to national, and we're talking about things that are affecting not just people in the area, but kind of all over. I think that's where you're going to hear a lot more about how we interact and kind of listen behind the scenes of what we talk about in our off hours. And this is where we're coming from. This is after, you know, we have long clinical days. This is after our 12-hour, 10-hour days. It's our 6 days a week. You get to hear and peer in kind of behind the curtain, the Oz behind the curtain, if you will, about kind of what we touch on. And hopefully you enjoy and let us know and comment below if you do.
Speaking of comments, just a little shout out to our number one fan, Tiny T-Box. Tiny T-Box was kind enough to actually present this little head game mug. I don't know if we can kind of zoom in or we can kind of go get that, Mr. Producer. That's okay. You know, you had a rough morning this morning, so I don't want to tax you too hard. But a little shout out to Tiny T-Box, our number one fan, who really enjoys what we do. She comments on Facebook, on Instagram, and she was gracious enough to give me a belated birthday present, a little head game mug. So thank you so much, Miss Tiny T-Box. I guess let's just start off with the obvious. Mm-hmm. You go away to St. Lucia. Mm-hmm. You rotten scoundrel, you. Right. And thank you so much for sharing the all-day cabana story.
Oh, yeah.
That really just made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Mm-hmm. Here you are, back in reality. You missed the week of the election. Mm-hmm. Lucky you.
Good timing.
And all of the aftermath with that, which is now still promoting significant times of uncertainty. It's creating a more bipartisan culture. Country, I should say, more than ever. A lot of people are on edge. You're coming off vacation / honeymoon, arguably one of the more joyous times in your life. Mm-hmm. Back to the cold reality of the Northeast Corridor.
Right.
What was your reaction coming home about everything that you had missed, and what kind of went through your head when you just started to kind of engage in that grind again?
Yeah, I think I have to start to where kind of I was until where I came to. And so before with full knowledge of the election coming, I was like, good, we get to kind of escape that.
Were looking forward to it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I just don't have to be in here. I don't have to deal with it. You know, the political views of within the family or externally as well.
Sure.
And what that means, I get to kind of just sit back and I get to relax. And if I want to escape to a beach, I can. But I found myself even there kind of being mentally consumed by thinking about, okay, what's going on? And especially as it dragged out, I kind of wish it was done just on Tuesday. I'm sure a lot of people did, but it kind of dragged on. And so it was something that was kind of always there. I remember on Tuesday morning, I was like, I wonder what the mood of the resort is going to be like on Wednesday. To see what people's interactions
after.
Are. Yeah. And even there's a lot of people from Britain there too, but I could hear every once in a while as I kind of peered in, just listening to different conversations around the bar of people. It was on people's mind, but it wasn't the only thing on people's mind. And so then as we started to kind of get closer and closer to that date of departure, knowing as this was coming up, what, you know, no necessarily was, selected yet at the time, we were thinking, well, let's just enjoy where we are. And my wife actually, I thought, had the best statement of the trip of saying, you know, a lot of people come to vacations or go on vacations or have their trips as a means of escape, as a means of getting away.
Yeah, checking out.
And for us, she kind of said, well, we're really fortunate because we enjoy what we do and we can connect with it, and we're actually. It's more like this is more just a recharge rather than an escape for us, because when we go back, it's not like we're dreading it. And we're really fortunate to be in that position. And so coming back wasn't necessarily like, oh my gosh, I have to go back. It was obviously unfortunate. It would be nice to stay a few more days in paradise. But I think it was more so, I think, you know, how do we interact with the world now, right? Now that it's starting to shift and, where the world was. So I think a big element of coming back here was saying, not necessarily what am I coming back to, it's how do I handle it when I do. And so getting back into this world, it's managing expectations, talking with people, communicating with family members who maybe were distraught about the outcomes.
Do you remember the question that I asked you when you came back? Remember the first question that I asked you?
I do not.
I always ask people this when they travel abroad. I asked you, does the world seem smaller?
Right.
Remember?
Yeah.
I think you said yes.
Yes.
And I asked that question because I've been fortunate enough to, I grew up with parents, grandparents mm-hmm. that traveled extensively. When I was, let's see, the first time that I traveled, I was a little guy. I learned from my father an observation that he would always journal. Mm-hmm. He would always write things down.
Right.
And I remember when my brother and I, 3 years older, were about 8 and 11. We were fortunate enough to take a trip to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And his only requirement of us was to journal a few minutes. I think the limit was 15 mm-hmm. At the end of each day to write things down, to try to get some essence of what you were thinking at that time.
Right.
And of course, at like 8 and 11, we were like, oh, are you kidding me? Like, you know, we want to go play ping pong. And that kind of stuck with me mm-hmm. of just trying to be as present as possible when I was away. But when you travel, you start to see how other people live. And I think a very specific mindset shift mm-hmm. occurs. And a lot of people struggle with this mm-hmm. the older that they get, being able to unplug. You know, we've heard of the resorts that'll give you 5%, 10% credit off your bill or towards additional purchases if you're willing to hand over your phone
right.
when you check in and lock it away for mm-hmm. the week. Mm-hmm. You know, completely check out. But in today's world with communication mm-hmm. and the cell phone,
right.
and the constant bombardment, mm-hmm. right? It's such a chaotic environment. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'd like to try to get after a little bit more is how do we manage the chaos that's around us? And what role does fear play mm-hmm. in that capacity in today's world with so much uncertainty?
Right. I think you're kind of hitting a lot of it of saying, the bombardment, I think, is a really good terminology because I think that's what we are. It's
not the fun kind dodgeball in gym class in sixth grade.
Right.
Not that fun kind.
It reminds me of when I was a kid in doing a camp and the fire truck would come and spray kids on asphalt with the fire hoses, and we would be flying back for our outdoor in the summer kind of
yeah.
cool.
Now that's
day.
Definitely showing more a sign of the times.
And right.
I'm twice your age, so close to twice your age. So if that was happening when you were a kid, you can only imagine. I think I told you the peanut drop story, right?
Right. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. The summer camp where a plane would fly over, a single engine prop plane would fly over hundreds of kids in this. Imagine this happening today. Wide open green pastures, rolling hills, Breezy Point Day Camp, which unfortunately has gone under some more difficult times in the last few years. Certainly not what it once was, but family-owned business, tremendous facility, lifetime experiences that me and my children will always hold near and dear to our heart. A single engine prop plane would fly over this massive field and they would slide open the door, tear open a massive burlap sack of peanuts in the shell and just scatter them across the sky. And it would rain peanuts and it would bop you in the head and you would hold out your shirt and try to catch them.
Right.
Imagine that happening today.
Right.
Oh my.
And I think that's a quite
that's good
experience.
Chaos.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember kids like who were scraped up, just laughing and running back to get hit again. But the way I'm saying this is saying like that bombardment is that water kind of hitting you, and we're used to just taking our water as like through the water fountain, right? It's nice, easy, it's calm.
Yeah, I
can take it in.
Right.
But now it's that fire hose that's just hitting us constantly.
Relentless.
And it's not letting up. It's not giving you that time to really...
No recovery time.
Right, right. And I think people are looking for, how do I get away from this? How do I escape this at all costs?
Because I can't turn the hose off.
Right.
So how the hell do I get out of Dodge?
Right. But I'm also thinking about those kids, me being one of them, who has scrapes on their legs and bruised up and banged up a little bit, but still smile and keep running back for more. And what that means, like, in terms of, yeah, that's going to be chaotic. Yes, you know you're going to get flattened sometimes, but there's also a lot of joy in terms of embracing
so much
that.
And I think that's such a wonderful example of how something can be, you think about like the duality of an experience where something can be a little fearful, but it can be exciting at the same time, or it can be a little painful, but mm-hmm. rewarding at the same time. How you think we've lost the ability to decipher between the two, or has society encouraged such a neutrality where it has to be, neutrality is not the right word.
Duality?
Yeah. That it has to be one or the other.
Right. Yeah.
It's got to be a whole, you know, tons of fun mm-hmm. or it scares you out of your mind.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's a mentality that like we need to protect at all times, I think, and in terms of protecting ourselves or protecting others. And I think that duality is natural to say like, oh, that kid has scrapes and bumps on himself, so let's make sure that we pull him out. Let's take him away so he doesn't go back.
Right.
Right.
Where you're saying that's more society.
Right. Yeah. Right. Society like saying, let's take him away. Right. Yeah. Instead of like just letting them
wrapping learn. People in insulation.
Yeah. Letting them learn, letting them experience, letting them.
Why do you think connect. That is? Why do you think society has become so consumed with protecting people from themselves?
I think it's saying it's comes back to, I think, the mentality of saying like the safety aspect. So when somebody is safe, if you will, and deemed safe based on society, right. society now as it grows, like safety is a place of unharm, but it's a place of passivity, like of like, oh, I can sit here and nothing's going to harm me. But there's a lot of lack of growth within that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you can't really turn off the psychological brain that we've spent so many years in cultivating and developing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more apparent for us. Mm-hmm. But if safety prohibits growth, mm-hmm. then how else can we achieve it without some type of what we would deem a risk?
Right.
How does that happen?
I think it's
how do we safely learn?
It's really challenging because through adversity comes growth. I think about a muscle, and the only way that a muscle really grows and gets stronger is through it tearing. Like that's what working out is when you work out, you're tearing your muscle, then actively recovering, right? The recovery aspect is that part of potential safety, of growth, of nurturing, right? And maybe we're doing a bad job of actively recovering, but also we're ignoring the fact that you need to have those tears. You need to have those challenges. You need to
face
that.
So how do we tear our mind?
Oh.
I mean, because athletically speaking, I'm right there with you
right.
with, hey, you know, that's how you build muscle mass. That's right. how you get stronger. It's mm-hmm. literally a tearing process. It's in the recovery where it's bouncing back. It's coming back stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's just flip it to the head game that everyone is still confused in they're trying to play in November 2020.
I think a lot of people are trying to recover without the tearing.
I agree with you.
That puts them in a place of, again, more of that passivity or that, again, escape that we talk about a lot. Is like chaos is definitely overwhelming. Chaos is a lot. There's a lot of, again, the bombardment aspects of life. And you're talking about this duality. I think people are saying it's either chaos or recovery and not the coupling of the two. That's
right.
Really
there's no blend.
No, there's no blend. And that creates this... saying that fear is bad,
right?
Saying that I can't overcome this.
It's the duality of mankind. It's the bipartisan nature in which we now operate more than ever. And regardless of, again, political party affiliation, preference of candidate, yay or nay, blue or red. I said this a couple of weeks ago. We're just more north and south pole than ever. Why is it that we have to find that safety in just being on our own side? Why are we struggling so much to consider or to mentally compromise mm-hmm. another's opinion?
Well, I think there's a lot in terms of like perspective. And what I mean by that is right now, if you look online, if you look on TV, if you look in social media, the perspective that you're seeing is the ideal perspective. And what I mean by that is that this is curtailed, it's tailored, it's filtered, right? Actually yeah. filtered of what you're seeing and what you're identifying with, what you're connecting with.
Do you think, excellent point, do you think most people are in touch with that?
I don't.
I don't at all.
I think people are like, that is just like, if you look at somebody, it's like, oh, they look like that all the
time. Does that make us lazy?
Maybe. I mean, maybe not so much lazy, but
well,
maybe it's
give me
more
a different word though.
Well, I think maybe it's a choice of more ignorance.
Right.
And what I mean by that is I don't think people like to peer behind the curtain because it's comfortable not to.
It's uncomfortable, right? Which goes back to fear, right?
Right.
It's an avoidance tactic. Yes. What I'm saying is, it's just the way you simply kind of articulated that what we're looking at is coming through a filter.
Yeah.
I sort of imagined like, you know, the panoramic view versus like, you know, the long range sight mm-hmm. on a power rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're trying to see 100% versus 2%.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I don't think people connect that what they're seeing on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook mm-hmm. is the long-range power rifle scope mm-hmm. version. But I can say with a fair amount of certainty, as a society, we have become passive.
Right.
We like to receive mm-hmm. more than give.
Mm-hmm.
It's become more of like a mental gluttony
mm-hmm.
where we just want to consume
mm-hmm.
because I think that it makes us more, it satiates us more to reinforce the smaller ideas that we have in our mind. And that's what makes us feel safe.
Right. So right? What does that do to people when they are always kind of seeking that take or that safety? What behaviors kind of create that?
Well, it's self-absorbed by design,
right?
Because I don't want to do anything to disrupt my stasis,
comfort,
what we call
yeah,
stasis.
Comfort,
we,
yeah.
I don't want to mess with that. Why would I want to mess with that?
Mm-hmm.
I want to receive and digest my information at my own rate.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've talked a little bit about this, of how social media platforms are designed. They are profiling you every time you look at something and continue to feed the gluttonous mentality
right.
of what your palate is
mm-hmm.
seeking.
Mm-hmm.
It's no surprise that when I go on to YouTube for head game purposes, that I'm getting videos consistent with my ideology.
Right.
That's no accident,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you think people connect those dots aside from maybe seeing some more recent documentaries that are supposed to wake us up?
Yeah, Mike, is there anything in terms of kind of in your production world that you're noticing too in terms of how do we engage people or how do we get people their comments and how do we get their kind
Throw
of
Throw your
views?
Hat in the ring, Mike. Will
yeah.
you wake up,
yeah.
dude? You're over there like, you know, putzing around.
Well, yeah, I thought you guys were killing it, so I wanted to let the
Oh, you wanted the, you wanted the flow.
The flow. Yeah.
The flow.
The flow. You wanted the
Mihai chicks and Mihai flow.
I can't help but notice the
Hungarian.
The what? The Hungarian?
Mihai chicks and Mihai is Hungarian.
Uh-huh.
He's a flow expert. We like to say Mihai chicks and Mihai. We just like to say that. He's a flow expert that has done 40 plus years of research in the optimal like action awareness merge. Only achieved through, you know, high level intensity, self awareness, the flow state.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys were in that and I wanted to, that's why I was just letting
right.
you go.
So now that you can join us though.
Yeah, now that you're in, you can join us in the flow. There's plenty
room
of room for
the,
for
there's
flow.
Room for the flow party.
Everybody can find the flow.
Yeah, man.
I can't help but notice the algorithms are just like, it's almost like insulting. It's like you can't Why think for yourself? Why seek out something outside of the box that you're already listening to that you might be interested in? Here you go. Here's what you like. Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're designing for you. And you might like something else, but we want you to keep you coming back and we want to keep feeding you the algorithms that you're playing into. So here it is.
You might like something else is a really interesting thing because it takes away the exploration. Like that getting fed to you takes away the exploration of finding things that might be piquing different interests.
It sucks right? the marrow out of life is what it does right. because life is all about the exploration. Life is all about the unknown. Life is all about getting your ass kicked.
Right. And they might be talking about things like through the algorithms for being predictive, fairly predictive, or are they just really, I'm wondering this, are they just looking at what's happening now? What are your interests right now and how do we feed it? Or are they looking to say, how do we feed your interests now so they evolve into something in the future? And thus now your choice or potentially your exploration is getting taken away for what you might enjoy in the future because now you like being fed that stuff rather than actually finding it yourself.
Again, but I don't think people are making that connection when they are, in my opinion, more passively receiving because, and this is the danger of it, we're hardwiring the next generation far, far too soon to passively digest, to receive the narrative that is the most palatable. We're doing that far too soon. Mm-hmm. You know, the cell phone, the iPad has been the babysitter for a while. And, yep. And when the byproduct of that is calm, satiated, passive children at first start.
Can you tell your story about when you went to that resort?
And, when I went to the resort. So we were in Mexico, and we were at all inclusive. We took the kids. This was years ago. So I want to say my children were about 10 and 8. About 10 and 8, I will say. And we went there for the holiday season between Christmas and New Year's. And as one would, at the dinner table at home, Dr. Lee likes to encourage good manners, communication, well-behaved children. It's something that we practice at home. It's something that we try as best we can to weave into the everyday norm. And when we do go out, we expect that same type of behavior. There are no exceptions because we're in a different place, yada, yada, yada. We go to someone who has been to an all-inclusive. There are different types of restaurants, and there are different gradients, different degrees based on the type of food. Some are very, very casual, where you can wear flip-flops and a t-shirt for lunch. There are some restaurants that are semi-formal. Some are that are a little bit more formal. They may encourage that a gentleman wear a jacket or no jeans or things like that. We were in the higher-end French restaurant on New Year's Eve, and it's a menu where you have some options, but it's still limited. And one of the appetizers that was on the menu was escargot. Watch mm-hmm. that escargot. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And the kids had never had it at that point. Daddy got a big bowl of escargot, and the children were trying it, and they were curious, and some liked it and some didn't. And as so the story goes, we're sitting down, and a party of four comes and sits next to us. And it is a Russian couple, a little bit younger than us at the time. So I'll say at that time, late 20s, early 30s. And they had a best guess 5-year-old and 3-year-old with them. Younger couple clearly had gotten together earlier in life. And when they came and sat down next to us, perpendicular to us, I should say, they spent the first 5 minutes of setting their children up for the evening by busting out the iPads that had preloaded movies on them with big, like, Beats-style headphones. And they set both of their children up with movies so that Mater and Pater, Ma and Pa, could sit down, relax, have a nice cocktail, and enjoy their French cuisine. And my son at 10 years old was like, Dad, look at what they're doing. Look at what they're doing. And I said, you know, it's not polite to stare. They can make their own decisions. They can make their own choices. So why in the hell does that bother me? Well, let me tell you why that bothers me. And that's why you're asking me to kind of tell the story. Yep. Because Dr. Stevens knows that things like that kind of fire me up. We have created a society of passive children. And I'm not finger pointing every single parent out there. We have created a society of passive children because we no longer see being a parent as a sacrificial role. And that's a problem. That's a big problem. Because last time I checked, because I'm an expert in human development, the role of parenting requires sacrifice. It requires commitment. And I'm not just talking going off and getting a job. I'm not talking about putting clothes on your child's back or a roof over the head or food on the table. What I'm talking about is it requires that you check the me first mentality at the door when you go and do things. And at the very heart of what we are struggling with right now, we have raised a generation of children that were stimulated, that were distracted, that were left to figure out for themselves on their own far too soon. And those children are now growing up and they're acting out and they're lost and they're confused. And it's all a byproduct of what we have created for ourselves under the guise of this modern day society in which parents want to have kids, but they still want their own. It's a core issue. It's creating more insecurity, more fear in these children because they're waking up in their teens and they're realizing they've been left to sort for themselves far too long. Yeah. I could keep going and going.
That's good. And that's exactly why I think it's really relevant for people to hear about how we're going to connect. And then in the world right now at this very moment, right, it's, now we're asking them to deal and manage because those are the kids who are probably now around 18, seniors in high school or entering into college. And now they're having to deal with that transition and the pandemic that's happening.
And they don't know how.
And they don't know how. They don't have the resources to because they've been handed things for a long period of time. And handed doesn't mean that they don't work hard. Handed means here's an iPad. Okay, now you have, there's things to soothe you. There's constant things to escape from. But this is something that you can't escape from. How the heck do you manage it? How do you deal with something?
Yeah, there's no iPad that you can stick your face in long enough to make the chronicity of what's going on in the world go away. Mm-hmm. You see, and through your notion of escapism, what we're really talking about, Doc Stevens, is we're talking about learned avoidance.
Right.
We're talking about someone's inability to manage and digest daily stress because their knee-jerk reaction when the going gets tough is to bail. Whether they're doing that literally and removing themselves physically, they're shutting down, they're isolating, they're checking themselves, or they're burying their face in their fucking phone. It's just right there.
Right.
We see it all the time. I told the story just the other day. I don't know who I was telling it. Was I remember about, this is prior to MindFlex LLC. So this is over 10 years ago. We just celebrated our 10th anniversary this past March, not in the consistent time in which we were hoping for our 10th anniversary, but like anything else, we try to make do. So this is probably 12 years ago, close. So put that in your mind, right? 2008, right?
Yep.
Sounds about right. Mm-hmm. I go off to get a slice of pizza. I'm working for someone else. It's a group practice. I need a break. I need a respite. I go off and it was one of those days where the public schools were not in session. It was some type of holiday. It could have been Columbus Day. It could have been Martin Luther King Day. I don't know which day that it was. I go in to get a slice of pizza. There are, you know, the traditional booth that just seat four people.
Right.
There are two booths side by side, eight teenagers, clearly all friends. And as I'm walking to get my slice, I just kind of feel out of my peripheral vision on the right-hand side that there's someone there, but it's kind of oddly quiet. And I just happen to just, you know, put my head on a swivel and roll over to the right. And there I see two clusters of four teenagers side by side, not saying a word. Why? Were they patiently waiting for their food? No. They all had their face in their phone. eight teenagers side by side, two by two by two by two, not saying a word, not interfacing, not communicating, simply choosing to be someplace else. And that is all you need to understand, the profound disconnect that has been going on that has promoted escapism, avoidance. So when fear is at its highest, it's I need to go hide, right? Because it's an over-learned experience. Mm-hmm. They've got no shot.
Right.
They've got no shot in trying to cope or manage their skill set differently unless something is taken from them that they value.
Right.
And now then, it becomes even more of the over-justification, the disgruntled teen,
the bargaining.
Exactly. You know, all this stuff. And as that continues to happen, it promotes, to your earlier point, escapism.
Right. Yeah, it's that self-soothing thing. I remember getting to get the COVID test to go to travel. I was sitting in the waiting room of a urgent care, and everybody was on their phones. And then there was this older couple, probably in their late 70s, who were there to get a rapid test as well. And I always have an ear out for people, and I'm listening to them talk. And the wife taps the husband on the shoulder and says, "Look, everybody's on their phone." And it's the same exact experience. And
right.
I'm sure if you take a moment and look up from your phone, you'd probably see the same thing in a lot of situations.
Yeah, but this is where my head goes. And I just kind of reviewed what I had shared with you as I was listening to you tell that story. Mm-hmm. This is the point that really kind of knocks me over the edge. Mm-hmm. When you think of an anticipation of Thanksgiving,
right,
and you think of the COVID-19 pandemic, mm-hmm, and there are more and more aggressive reports of increase in cases and increase in deaths, even though that science has more recently told us, as we were talking earlier,
right,
that less people are actually dying who actually contract COVID.
Right.
Right? That statistic is coming down, but mm-hmm, that unfortunately that's not being talked about or that's not being shared.
Right.
When you think about this whole notion of what I'm calling a disconnect, mm-hmm, I think of hashtag alone together. Mm. Because that's been going on for over a decade.
Right. Our new normal.
You see?
Yeah.
The hashtag alone together is keep your distance, mm-hmm, stay apart. But because we're actively choosing to collectively do this for the greater good of humanity, we are alone together. Then I go back to those eight teenagers, mm-hmm, two by two by two by two.
Alone together.
Alone together.
Right.
It's the same principle. Mm-hmm. So what, in fact, have we set ourselves up for? Mm-hmm. What is the next thing that's in line?
Well, I think kind of to your point, too, I think action and response is a big element of that. And what I mean by that is something happens and then we try to solve it. We're very try to react to something. Right. Once the kid's phone is taken away in some way, that's when they finally respond. And it feels like the parent is there. The response and action, or action and response, to me, is that we're always trying to do things retroactively. We're waiting for a problem to arise and then we're trying to solve it. We're wondering in here when we have clients come in, it's why is my kid having these type of thoughts? Why is my kid not managing their feelings? Why is my kid acting out? And it's always the why after the fact versus all of the stuff that predates that is prior to the things that you could be doing actively rather than retroactively. And I think that's important. That's missed a lot in terms of, you know, as you touch on that well adjustment, as you touch on escapism, right? It's people aren't actively working towards managing and accepting and embracing chaotic environments or challenges. They're actively seeking, okay, a challenge happens. How do I get away from this?
Right.
It's the David Goggins mentality of saying, instead of I'm looking for the end of the race, which David Goggins would never say, he looks to say, how much more can I go? Like this in the middle of the race as I'm running, that's what it's all about. It's not about achieving and getting to the end of the race. Like the pain, the suffering, the challenge that it took to get there, and then the actual race itself is where you're getting that reward. It's not the end of the race. And I think everyone's looking for where's the end of the race Where can it be done? Where can I be finished with this?
Yeah.
But then you miss all of the glory, all of the challenges, all of the success in between and the failures in between for growth, because you're just looking to where do I need to get towards the
end. We have become a society that values relief mm-hmm. more than anything.
Yeah.
We just want to be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We deem, in my opinion, far too many experiences as stressful,
mm-hmm.
as painful. Not to discredit any clinical levels of stress that people might endure for any particular reason, right? Dramatic life transition, change, mm-hmm. death of a loved one, loss of job, mm-hmm. you know, financial insecurity, the big ones, mm-hmm. okay? We've become so relief-driven
mm-hmm.
that we don't know what it is about that life experience that we can continue to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really just a question of us staying in the lifeboat longer?
Mm-hmm.
Do we just have to, you know, continue to drift?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Do we have to be flooded firsthand for that learning curve to be expedited?
Mm-hmm. I think there needs to be some type of learning. And as you're talking, it makes me think of like resources of do people have those resources and to expedite that learning curve? Like, can people handle and take on the chaos of the world? Like, is it a nature of are people lacking a resource to be able to manage that? Or are they not fostering the resources that they have? To manage those challenges, to manage that stress. Like, I think it's forced a learning curve because it's after the fact versus promoting it just as a culture of saying, yeah, mental health is great. Mental health should be taken care of after the fact rather than promoted as something that you can actively work on. You're building. And instead of saying this is a tool after the fact, it's actually a tool when it arises.
Yes.
Versus this is a tool that you can use later.
Yeah.
It's, oh, I'm using my resiliency. I'm using my thought challenge in the moment rather than after the fact. Because I think that's where mental health a lot talks about and kind of sits is after the fact.
Podcast Mike, you were talking before the show in pre-production about the pandemic. And what did you say about mental health? About what there was the emphasis of one thing versus the other? I don't remember what you said.
I was saying that people like to focus on the science of it, but they don't like to focus on the psychology of it and how it's affecting people psychologically.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Focusing on the science.
Like,
right?
people are becoming, it's affecting people's mental health. We'll deal with that later. But right now there's people dying.
Yeah.
Whoa, how about we deal with both?
Right.
How about we learn to deal? How about we learn to deal with the death through promoting good mental health measures?
Right. Practices.
Instead of,
right.
Well, people are dying now and, you know, people are being affected.
Then we'll deal with it afterwards.
Right. Do you think that there's been more of that direct message? That the mental health is more of an after the fact thing?
Yes.
Or is that you feel that?
It's like the news articles are, well, we're just finding out that mental health, kids are starting to affect their mental health. It's like, yeah, we knew this was going to happen,
right?
But nothing was done.
So why do you think it's coming up now?
Because it's actually starting, like you said earlier, you're starting to see the head. It's starting to,
yeah.
People are starting to act out. People are starting to become depressed.
Right.
You know, use substances.
I remember talking to Jessica about this in one of our Zoom calls during the, do I say first quarantine? Do I say first stay at home order with the anticipation of other shutdowns that are potentially looming? That where are all the mental health specialists? Where's the, you know, the panel of experts,
right?
Talking about what is happening, of, you know, aside from the technological ability to educate children from home, let's talk about all the other stuff that's going on through the social disconnect, through the isolation, through the boredom that even the finest students are enduring because of the monotony and the repetition and the sterile platform of online communication. Can it be done? Of course. Is technology bailing us out? A lot of people would say yes. I could make the argument that we would be better served as a human race if when this pandemic hit, it was 100 years ago. And that might sound absolutely crazy because maybe your first instinct is, oh my God, so many other people would have died. Possibly. But you know what would have happened? We all would have quickly hunkered down and we would have focused more on how to be human. We would have focused more on how to take care of ourselves. We would focus on values and morals of what we hold the most dear, even though that's in a local commercial coming to a TV home near you, of that you all need to hunker down and think about those important times, especially now around the silly season, those times of the holiday season. And I may come off as a bit frustrated, as a bit bitter, as a bit sarcastic. That's because I am. That's because I am too part of this human X factor that we're all enduring. And I think that it's just, we've done shows called The Boiling Point, where you hit your nth degree. Your internal temperature is at max. What do you think COVID fatigue is all about, folks? COVID fatigue is enough of being enough. It's sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah, and I think a big thing that you're kind of touching on is you're not discrediting what's happening.
Absolutely not.
It's 100% overwhelming, challenging, difficult, asking more than almost ever before. But we also have to think about this as these things weren't necessarily considered when the choices are made. When choices are made, we look to say, okay, this is what the facts say, not how these are going to affect. In terms of change management, a lot of change management people will talk about this and know about this. So I can go to a company and I can say, you know what, if we put these things into place for your company, let's say it's a scarf manufacturing company, the holidays are coming up. Let's say it's a scarf manufacturing company. And I go to this company and say, if you change this part of your product line, it's going to improve revenue by 30%. Now that is a significant margin. The people who are at the top are looking at that significant margin. So if we make that shift, okay, we get our bonuses up, we get our income up, we get the revenue up, we're gonna sell more scarves, our customers are gonna be happier. But what's not always considered is the line worker, who that's going to affect, who's been there for 30 years doing it the same way and now has to change up their system that they're going to deem as either more challenging, slower, even though the facts say that it's going to improve 30%. So I'm going to show him all the data. I'm going to show him all the stuff, how it's going to improve it. It might even improve his salary. But you know what? After a week, that guy's going to be fed up. That woman's going to be fed up. They're going to be sick and tired because emotion plays a role in decisions. And it's not something that's always considered when we're making choices, because just because the facts say that that's going to be better does not mean that it's always better for the individual. And those are the secondary effects that also need to be considered in a change situation. And I think those were neglected throughout this entire process and are continuing being neglected in terms of, yes, the facts say less people will transmit if certain things shut down. And 100%, you want to be safe. But at the same time, what does that do? What are the emotions? How does that affect people? What are the secondary contributions? What is this going to do to a culture and society that now has to make a shift versus just the facts?
It's going to disable us. It already has. That disability is coming more to the surface. Because we talk a lot about mental fatigue, mm-hmm. and the role that that plays in performance. Mm-hmm. Well, it's no different for the human role of performance that we're asked to play. Mm-hmm. Mental fatigue is something that has such a dominant force that it makes it more difficult for you to endure the common factors associated with a task. Mm-hmm. We call it being taxed. We call it being overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Well, how does that manifests. How does that build up? It can make us miserable.
Right.
It can make us disconnected. Mm-hmm. It can make us, it can impact who we are at the workplace.
Right.
It impacts our personality. Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas most might consider that their personality is permanent, mm-hmm. when in fact it is not. Mm-hmm. Right. More and more science is suggesting that through purposeful behavior and the reward that comes along with that, the acknowledgement that's associated with that, mm-hmm. starts to change the feelings that we feel because of the behaviors that we engage in, which then gives us that different perspective.
Right. And it's talk to a, you know, a single mom of three right now who all of her kids are at home and she has to work. Like, talk to that woman. Like, what is that doing to her? What is that doing to her kids, who maybe one of them was on the precipice of ADHD and now that's fully coming to the surface? You're telling me that decision is going to be better long term for everyone? I think it's those people are the neglected ones in that sense, and it creates this disability for us as a society. Again, not saying that what they're doing is necessarily wrong. What I'm identifying is these are the issues that are arising.
Why do we feel the need to throw in the disclaimer?
Yeah.
Why do we feel the need to do that? Not that there's anything wrong with what they're doing. Not that we shouldn't try to stay safe. When did it actually happen where we couldn't just exercise an opinion? When did that become uncool? When did that become problematical?
Right.
Why do we have to explain away, oh, by the way, because we all do it.
Right.
We all build it in. Mm-hmm. It's still that need to be, is it more of a need, Hunter, to be more of a well-rounded individual? Is it not to piss anyone off? Is it to convey a particular level of empathy? Because I can make the argument, perhaps this is me after my 51st birthday, that I am at a place in my life where now the greatest gift that I can actually give is my genuineness.
Right.
And if you don't like it, that's fine. If you want to disagree with me, that's even better. Present some type of argument that makes sense. And for that reason, we can then better kind of hash it out. Because you know what that's going to lead to? That's going to lead to communication. Communication encourages a greater sense of connection. And connection is development.
Right. And I think it's a side effect of a growth of society in terms of saying the judgment that is now here, right? The thing that is constantly on you. I guess it's more so fear, in a sense of saying, like, I need to make sure that I'm tempering myself right now so that I don't get canceled? I don't get right deleted. Judged. I don't know, right?
What deleted.
Is well, it's pretty much deleted now. It's,
of course
it's,
it is.
You lose your job. Your relationships are destroyed. You're losing your entire what you've worked for your entire life for something that you said 17 years ago.
Right.
It's how do I manage? How can I change? There's no growth. There's no opportunity for growth for individuals.
Which all goes back to one of our earlier points,
right?
Of that escapism and that avoidance and, mm-hmm. and wrapping ourselves in insulation.
Right.
Because this is the point, my man. If you and I are feeling it,
yep.
What do you think that that's doing to the next generation? What do you think that's doing to my children, mm-hmm. your future children?
Right.
What do you think that's going to do if we're actually sitting here now grappling with, should I be genuine? Mm-hmm. Should I actually commit to a greater sense of who I am and further articulate that through a sound, scientifically based opinion? Because if I do, there's potential repercussion with that. Mm-hmm. But if I'm on the other side of the coin, you see, this is the interesting thing. Mm-hmm. If I'm pounding the pulpit on a narrative that's become the norm, mm-hmm. well, I can do whatever the hell I want. I can act out. I can exercise my freedom of speech and the capacity that may be offensive to, mm-hmm. to most, to many.
Right.
As long as I'm consistent with that flavor of the month.
Right. You can't be a good person if you say one thing or if you do one thing, which is not necessarily the case. It's very black and white. It's very this or that. It's all or nothing. There's no room for gray area. There's no room for development. There's no room for growth, which puts me on a tight rope to say, I have to do this perfectly, exactly, or I just have to get completely out of the way of the people who are. And it becomes a very polarizing aspect. There's the technology that's eventually going to be coming out, Neuralink by Elon Musk, and they're saying that potentially you could read each other's thoughts. Whoa. Instantaneously. You won't use language to convey message. It will be completely just your thoughts, unfiltered. And Joe Rogan, I think, boldly says, like, I would love that, because he's a pretty non-filtered guy, and I'm not necessarily saying, but I almost did it. I almost gave a disclaimer. So now I'm going to hold back.
Not
so
that there's anything wrong with it.
Exactly. So he's an unfiltered guy. And in terms of that, I think genuinely ask yourself, would you want someone to know exactly what you're thinking all the time?
Absolutely not.
And I think most of the people are going to have that same kind of mentality, because I think as much as we want to be genuine and good, I think we're always trying to filter the best way possible.
Right.
It's the, if you, now that I have a wife, do these pants make me look fat? Which they never do, Sarah. But sometimes, right, other people may be in different relationships. They might think something, but they're not going to say that, because what is that going to do to you? And I think there's a need for that filter. But at the same time, if we're always constantly trying to filter our own genuineness, it makes us disingenuine, which makes us not credible.
It makes us robotic.
Which makes us, exactly.
It makes us less human.
Not human.
It extrapolates the emotion. It sucks it out. It dejuices the role that emotion plays in human behavior. There was a movie, I think it was a comedy with Mel Gibson. I think it was called What a Woman Wants, where he had the ability to hear, I think, all the thoughts that women were having in their head. Mm-hmm. And like most of those tales, it's something that you would first say, I would do anything to have that skill set. But then it's be careful what you wish for, where you can now hear all of those thoughts and what they're thinking about themselves, about others, and all of the nastiness that comes along with this. I think that would, I understand what Musk is trying to do. I've heard him give interviews as to his intention to genuinely assisting with people who struggle with developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. And really that I think that that emotional push that's coming behind this monumental effort, mm-hmm. I think is in the best nature, best of human nature, the best interests of human nature, I should say. But with like anything else, my concern is just that we're just going to bastardize the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make it into, and it's going to evolve into something that it's not. Look at social media. Mm-hmm. Look at the role that major corporations right now, big tech companies, are playing with senatorial hearings, mm-hmm. and the justification that's being made in the face of genuine. Of American issues like censorship.
Right. That stuff,
and the role that's taking.
That stuff becomes a requirement of society. Like that, if you're not on that, you're not a part of the larger group, right? If you're a kid, right, who's not on Snapchat, Instagram, you're left out. And they've forced that, and now it's like get on. It's the same thing potentially with this Neuralink. If your kid is falling behind in school because all these other kids have it embedded in them and are getting all A's, you don't think your kid's going to get that implanted in? You're not going to do that, right? I think it's saying like what's also pushing us in that direction as well. What's pushing us in that direction of I need to be better, or I need to filter, or I need to escape or handle less chaos in a way. Like there's a narrative in some capacity. Maybe that's aliens. Maybe it's not, right? Whatever it is, something's pushing us in that direction. Maybe it's a societal view, but it's pushing us in that direction, and it's leading us to a place of inhuman, ungenuine, filtered life.
Yeah.
Right? Very safe, very comfortable.
Very safe, yeah, very comfortable.
You notice like when you walk around sometimes, even more so with the onset of, you know, coronavirus, people, it just doesn't seem like you walk around society and everyone's just kind of like walking on eggshells. Nobody wants to bump into each other. No one wants to rock the boat or muddy the waters. Everyone's just kind of like, oh, well, I'm going to go about my life and make sure that I go to Wawa and order my sandwich and get out of everyone's way and go do my thing. And do you guys get that vibe from people? I kind of do, especially now since of the whole pandemic. It seems like everyone's just kind of like in their own world.
Yeah, it becomes much more like singular and isolating, right?
Even, right.
Again, alone together, if you will. There's an isolation feeling. I remember Casey Neistat, YouTuber, did a lot of vlogging. A big thing that he would talk about is New York City, and he lived there for, I think, like 15, 20 years. And a big thing that he would say is one of the most populous cities in the world, but it's, you're also like the most alone because everybody's just in their own thing. And so you could be around all of these people, but
so
you're just
consumed
with what with you're their own doing. Path. And I think that's spreading to more and more people, and it's becoming more from the collectivist to the, you know, individualistic.
So is that a byproduct of technology? Because is that unavoidable? As what we're talking about, is that just our natural course of evolution because of the role that science and tech have played in how we live, especially in the last 20 years?
Well, I think the flaw is that people think that they're going into a collectivistic nature. Like, I think people think they're going in that direction.
Did you read that on, like, on vacation or something? Or
no. Is this my hot take.
Is that just your rested brain?
I'm thinking people are thinking more going to this collectivistic, thinking about we're going to this collectivistic nature, right? That we're thinking more about others. In reality, you're actually thinking more about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's this disconnect, if you will, from that, of thinking about, oh, I'm taking more on, where in reality it's saying I'm putting a filter on my picture to get more likes, not because it's going to benefit everyone else.
Exactly.
And I think it's the notion of, oh, I'm benefiting everything else, justification of things, if you will, of saying this is going to be better rather than this is actually going to be better for myself. I put disclaimers because it's going to be better for me, not necessarily because what my statement is making is better for everyone. And I think it's the flaw and the gap and the disconnect between what you think, what you might be perceiving you're doing versus what you're actually doing. And that nature of what you're saying, podcast Mike, of saying people are feeling or becoming more actually isolated and thinking about themselves, even though they're like, oh, I'm kind of doing this for the betterment of the good.
Yeah. I think so many people make decisions as it relates to the societal pressure that already exists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think technology has exponentially advanced to that notion.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you pick up your phone, years ago we did on our WBCB 1490 head game, we did a show on FOMO and FOBO, fear of missing out and fear of a better option. And we looked at we allocated three whole sessions. It was a three-part miniseries on social media and the impact that it was having on society.
Hmm.
And this, I thought of when you were on your honeymoon.
Right.
And you knew it was election day.
Mm-hmm.
And you found yourself at times a bit distracted. Or you had an extra ear to the conversation of the Brits over at the bar.
Right.
And what they were saying. And who was maybe tracking the election. Or what was going on back in the States. Not a genuine fear in your case. But it was enough to distract you. Momentarily. Now, you know, just jack that up to the power of 1,000.
Right.
And that's exactly what's going on. It's going on so often. And again, I want these psychologists and sociologists to all get together and put together an official statement. What in the hell do you think is going on with so many people that are under duress, that are out there pounding the pavement, that may have the intention of a peaceful protest? Maybe they don't. Maybe they want to get violent. Maybe they want to steal shit. What do you think that's all about? That's all about a cumulative effect in which there was a fuse that was lit. The notion of social injustice was brought to the forefront of this country, and the unfortunate murder of George Floyd served as the spark. And everyone was sick and tired of being sick and tired because we had all, this is what I said just the other day to my children. We as human beings have an amazing ability to tolerate so much. Yep. When we have an understanding of what we're doing it for. When you look at the history of our country, even the human race, we can sacrifice gallons if we know what we're doing it for.
Right.
And during pre-production, we were talking podcast, Mike, and I mentioned to you what is happening now is there is an ever-changing pulse of radical misinformation that is encouraging us to stop doing the mass majority of how we live our lives while taking away the mass majority of our coping skills. Mm. Either end of the spectrum has been completely disrupted. Mm-hmm. Sacrifice a great deal for the greater good of humanity and remove all of your typical coping mechanisms that would assist with the most minimal level of stress right. that we endure. It's a recipe for absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. And I'm still waiting. Perhaps we need to appoint ourselves as the COVID-19 mental health team mm-hmm. to continue to pound this pulpit and share the message that mental health is a proactive movement.
Right. And the proactive is where you're hitting it, right? And I'm agreeing with a lot of the stuff that you're saying. I think the biggest element too in touching on is proactive. It's what can we be doing to build skills, to align ourselves with the tools rather than saying after the fact. When we make choices, when we make decisions, if you're an executive, if you're a worker, if you're a mom, if you're a dad, if you're a kid, right? What are you doing proactively to give yourself the resources necessary to manage those challenges versus saying, oh, the challenges happen and then I'm trying to adapt and get better to it.
Yeah.
It's trying to, I think a lot of people are trying to bail the water out of their boat while it's sinking. Well, you need to patch your boat first and then you can start to bail the water out and then you can figure out what the problem is. I think a lot of people are trying to, you know, save their ship while it's sinking.
Yeah. I think and again, when you think about, there's so many instances that we can easily gravitate to throughout the course of our life. So many years ago, when I said we would be better off if this happened 100 years ago, we didn't know what we didn't know then.
Right.
And what did that actually encourage? It encourages more innate instinct.
Right. Exploration.
Trust in oneself. Mm-hmm. What technology, a massive surge of information has done is I can make the argument it's contributing to de-evolution.
Hmm. Right.
I really can.
Right. You don't need to organize as much. You don't need, think about having to organize your own schedule. Now you just have an app and just boom, it's going to organize all your tasks for you. You don't need your frontal cortex to be able to develop.
I remember genuinely being upset when my children were first introduced to a computer program that spell checked their work for them.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because I remember, my mother was an English teacher. Mm-hmm. I remember doing my homework with a dictionary mm-hmm. next to me.
But the facts say that they're going to be able to write more because then they just is, right? The facts are saying that it's okay. It's good.
Right. But to actually look up a word right. that you didn't know what it means.
Yeah.
Or there was a word that you wanted to use. Mm-hmm. And this is not a knock at technology. It's the byproduct of what technology is sculpting in how we organize our thoughts, how we conceptualize and try to solve problems.
Yeah, and promotes reliance on it as well.
You know, I did a presentation at a Philadelphia Wellness Conference years back. What was her name? She was an interviewee that we actually did not bring on board at MindFlex. Sam? Do you remember Sam?
No.
You don't remember Sam?
No.
I think she was obviously a little bit before you. Anyway, she invited me to speak at a Philadelphia Wellness Conference.
Yeah. Sam. I know Sam.
Yeah.
I worked with her, actually.
Yeah. I thought you did.
A few years later. Yeah, Sam.
And she invited me. She endorsed me, I should say, as a public speaker in this Philadelphia Wellness Conference. And I went down there and I did a little bit on cross-train your mind. Mm-hmm. And I talked about imagining when you are driving that your GPS is no longer working. Mm-hmm. This was probably, I don't know, 6 years ago, maybe.
Right.
And I started to discuss that instead of the whole global positioning that we reframed that acronym to, and I'm not going to remember the third, but the first one was gestures. The second one was personality. And I forget what the S was. But my whole point was, you're used to navigating that familiar road only because the road is telling you, only because the GPS is telling you that the road is familiar.
Right.
You're not paying attention. You're not looking around at your environment. No. Like, I remember when I first started at Moss Rehabilitation Hospital, I had a 8.5 by 11 double fold brochure map where you actually could navigate on one page. And when it got up to the top of the corner, you had to flip the page. And then the map started at the bottom left corner,
right,
continuing to go if you were going northeast. Mm-hmm. And that's how I used to navigate to go see all my clients.
Right.
Of I had to literally read a map and say, now imagine that we've been conditioned so much to use technology, but now we're dropped in the middle of the Pacific on a life raft and you have to navigate via the stars.
Right.
It can't be done. We've lost that skill set.
See, in
this, right? So technology is helping us, but we're actually de-evolving.
Definitely. And I'm thinking about my own experience with the maps is where I used to go to AAU tournaments. And I remember sitting in the passenger seat of my car and my dad's driving, and I have a binder full of just page by page of how we can get to places. I know maybe the map fold and drawing that out,
right,
but it's very similar, right? Where you'd have to go through and kind of navigate your way. And I'm thinking about the movie The Martian. Have you seen it?
Yes. Matt Damon.
Yeah.
He's a botanist.
Yeah, Mark Watney.
Yeah.
And but he's left there alone, right? And of course, there's technology to use, but he's only able to survive because of, one, his own cognitions, his wit, and his training.
Yeah.
And his preparation, he didn't have contact with anyone for like a month or 2 months or 3 months maybe.
Yeah.
He needed to be able to rely on his own skills to survive, not just like to live in an environment that doesn't provide anything.
Right.
And
he had to grow his own food. He grew potatoes.
Yep. He had to grow his own food. He had to figure out communication, how he can get in contact. He had to figure out how to stay warm, what the exit strategy was going to be, how to sustain, how to maintain oxygen level, all this stuff he had to kind of figure out himself using his own cognition. I think that's a testament to the training, right? He talks about the last scene in the movie. I guess spoiler alert, it's old enough. The last scene in the movie is him talking to astronauts.
Yeah, he's returned.
Yeah, and he's like, how many people want to be astronauts? Like, they all raise their hands, and he's like, well, the skills that you're going to learn here might be the ones that save your life someday. And I think the skills, the training that people have at the astronaut level, I think the most recent mission, I think, just went up through Dragon Crew 1, they were waiting 10 years to go up into space. 10 years of training just for one mission. And I think the training that people then don't put in or don't learn, and that's even goes back to life lessons, right? Because of the escapism mentality. It's not giving them the psychological resources, the cognitive resources, because they don't have to rely on themselves. And training programs such as the astronaut crew program is forcing people to think that way. And that's what I'm thinking about The Martian is, like, he had to rely on himself.
Yeah.
He didn't have an escape. It was, if I escape, I die.
So, but to speak to that point though, yes, he was well trained, but it was only when the environmental demands became extreme that he had to, I might have said this once before, but the man of true self-reliance falls back upon himself in times of duress.
Mm, I like that.
Right? And that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Because I make the argument, I take the position, I try to convey to the people that I work with on a daily, weekly basis that you only find out how deep the character pool is within you when you are forced to face your biggest fear.
Right.
That's when you figure out exactly who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And to speak to this Martian example, right? It's that extreme shift in the environment where, yeah, it does come down to survival, but it's almost that classic against all odds, mm-hmm. where now perhaps some of those skills that you didn't even know were available to you mm-hmm. rise.
Right. And it's through that opportunity of challenge, of chaos, of the curveball that you have to adapt or else you're going to fall behind. And to that point too, you think about the people try to simulate this as much as possible. People try to simulate those chaotic environments, but when they actually show up, it's very difficult. But because of those simulations, you're a little bit more at ease. I'm thinking about Navy SEALs, you know, crawling through the mud under barbed wire while they're getting shot at with live rounds above them. That's putting them through not the exact situation, but it's going to put them pretty close to strengthening their mental resolve, not just their physical resolve, to be able to handle those moments. And I think the iPad shove in front of your face, the I need to escape away to a vacation, that's putting you into a position of saying, when challenging times come, that's where I need to go, not necessarily I need to lean in.
I like that. So what is it about leaning in that provides enough of a reward for us to do it again? What do we learn about ourselves that makes that experience positive enough that we then kind of code it and try to recognize something similar a second, a third, and beyond to continue to replicate it?
I think it's difficult because the wiring, I think, is still, even for myself, it's I want to get to the end of the race.
Yeah.
So I think it's...
I want relief.
Right. So it's sometimes very challenging, I think, to get people to that mindset to say, this is actually the reward in of itself, that I have the physical or mental capabilities to put myself through challenges.
Process, not outcome.
Right. I believe you recently showed me the video of the diver, the diving coach.
Yes.
Who has cancer. Do you remember his name?
I do not. Okay. He beat cancer, mm-hmm. but the cancer riddled him paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And the name of the documentary, it's an E60 special, mm-hmm. is he's a diving coach.
Right.
And once a year on his birthday.
Cliff DeVries.
Yeah. I think the name of the program is Cliff Diver.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know his first name was Cliff. I thought Cliff Diver was interesting before, but now I find it fascinating.
Now it's a great name, right? Cliff
Diving. He was a very successful high school diver. They actually show video clips in the E60 special of him diving in high school. Mm-hmm. A real tearjerker. It was an emotional moment when I showed it to you, and I had already seen it a second time.
It just shows, though, the human resolve in terms of the physical, mental, even if those things are broken down, it amazes me how many times I see those videos of people who could argue as the most disadvantaged at times, surmount things that you didn't think were possible, things that you wouldn't do, right? Would you jump off of a 30-foot diving board? There's a lot of people who are physically capable of doing it, but
that have no interest in doing that. Right.
And I think it's amazing to kind of see individuals, and we feel this emotion, because it's triumphant, because it's human, right? It's humans surmounting to their best. And I think a lot of times where we put ourselves into, oh, I could never do that, or I can't do that, or we take it maybe for granted, our abilities as well, because it's comfortable, because it's safe, because everything is going well for me right now, so why disrupt or challenge myself in any way? And I think thinking about this and thinking about the leaning in mentality is... leaning into those challenges makes you stronger, makes you able to overcome, makes you grow as a person. And those are the people who inspire us, are the people who lean in. But what if, let's imagine a world that we could all lean in.
I think that's a world that not only I find attractive, but I think that we could all benefit from in today's world based on what we've endured, what is still yet to come. And I think it's something that could provide each and every one of us a unique life lesson that really contributes to the greater good. And, you know, for the record, that's what we're trying to do, right?
Right. And that's the that's the shift from actually the individualistic to the collectivistic. All right, first time.
There you go.
Right. And I think that's the actual true shift. When you're willing to take on challenge, burden, chaos, you're truly actually managing yourself. you're not becoming self-absorbed, and you can lean into then support others
right.
throughout that challenge.
And then through that support of others, we can make the argument and then to further justify
right.
that lends itself to additional individual development.
Right. We love to say the whole is greater than the sum of its parts right. here. And as we start to work more together and
shout out to Gestalt, and we
lean into our challenges, right? The gains that you would have made are significantly compounded by the support of others. And so if you only would have got a 5% gain, the support of others and the integration of each other brings you from 5% gain to 10% gain. So you're constantly getting more gain through the support of others by everyone leaning in versus everyone leaning in to look at themselves.
Yeah. And I think with that, there's again, that shift, there's that reward. So much of the, I think, effort that people make for individualistic reward, it's satisfying, yes, but it's so one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I can say that at my age. Maybe I that's a byproduct of me being a little bit older or living a little bit longer. And I still see myself as like that, you know, arrogant, full of myself, 22-year-old.
Mm-hmm. You just made more rotations around
in
the sun.
In Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Yeah. Through more rotations and through more of that... hindsight is always 20/20, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we could all go back and sort of tap on the younger version of ourselves and just go, psst, you know, pay attention to this because it's important, because it's going to make a difference. I think so much of that would lend itself to being less afraid, less fearful, and then really, you know, balance all of us out in a holistic capacity that makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hunter Stevens, thanks so much for everything today. Clearly, we all need to go to St. Lucia for at least a week and do the day-long cabana experience. You've come back energized, and I really appreciate your perspective. Final thoughts, anything that you want to add?
Yeah, it reminds me, shout out to my office fans, but kind of your last comment is saying there's a, towards the end of the show, nine seasons, one of the characters says, I wish I knew it was the good old times. I wish I knew when it was the good old times, when I was actually in the good old times. So again, take a look around, look at other people, look at the world right now. You get to be with your family more than ever. Now that's sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes challenging. But at the same time, we get to be in an experience that, you know, these are things that we're going to talk about, right? We did nine months of lockdown. We don't know if there's going to be another 9 months, but most likely not. Maybe the worst is behind us. So let's experience it and share together and really focus on the here and now versus what could have been or what couldn't have been. I think it's more important to recognize that you're in the good old times, meaning you might have your health, you might have your faith, you might have your physical abilities, and recognize those moments because they're really... they can fleet. They can go in an instant. And I think it's important to remember and be thankful for those things.
And I would say that is officially your first mindful minute. So we're just going to leave it with that. My name is Dr. Lee Piccarello.
Dr. Hunter Stevens.
Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of the Head Game Podcast powered by Mindful Athlete Training. We will catch you next time on the flip side.